All right, guys, good to have you back. I'm here with my good friend Gary Hale. We have been doing a podcast marathon.
Yeah, it's. I guess you can binge on it if you want to.
with our schedules, I think we have to do is we have to knock out three or four every time we do it, because if we don't, then we're both busy and running crazy. And
man, I had a tickle in my throat in the last podcast, and I had to go out and get water, and there was no cup there, so I didn't tell you, but I had to. I just did the old Gideon, you know, held my hands. So I'm like throwing water in my
That comforts me a little bit, because I saw you come back in and slurp something off your hand, and I didn't know what that was.
Yeah, no, it was water that I had cupped in my hand just to try to get that tickle out of my throat, you know. And so then I was fine. And, of course, I was crying. You know when you cough so much and you try to hold it in?
Yeah.
So then I had tears in my eyes, too. And so it was a very touching moment. Very emotional podcast about changes and stuff. And so – That's a great segue. Walked right into it. But in talking about, you've got something going on back home, and that's one of the things that sometimes people forget is, you know, missionaries. Yes, they burn the boat, so to speak. They leave people and family structures back home. And yeah, technology has been such a blessing that you can still stay in contact better than you could 100 years ago. You know, but There's still important ties, and there are still certain life events that go on and stages that happen in a family, especially if you're gone for a number of years. Things happen in life. And so I think you're dealing with that right now with your father. And so bring us kind of up to speed. I think you've mentioned this on a podcast or two, but bring us kind of up to speed where he's at now. And let's talk about that from a missionary perspective. How do you deal with that? What are some things that you've learned about that?
I would say everybody's journey is a little different. It's individualistic. I wouldn't say everybody has to do the things the way we're doing it. Yeah. My dad came here, he had dementia, but not nearly what it is now, obviously. With our first year, we came in August 3 years ago. So this August will be our fourth year here. And they came down in Christmas time, right around a little after Christmas, actually. And he was showing some signs, more just insecurity and things like that. Yeah. And he was very, very, like, glued to my mom. But he is now to a point where he really doesn't get a whole lot of words and sentences together that make sense. Now he has days that are better and whatnot. But as far as, you know, his cognitive ability has declined tremendously. He's now, in a care facility. I wouldn't call it a nursing home. He actually did like 90 days of what they would call rehab, trying to help him out, but there's really nothing that they can do. That's been a little definite shock and trial for my mom. There's a learning process involved in all of that. But it seems like things have kind of leveled out a little bit. Mom's embraced it as her sanctification process. And so I think that's helped her, a little bit. We've definitely seen God's hand of provision along the way. Where he's at now, which is a rehab facility, mom had considered leaving him, but they are $14,000-something a month, to care. And so it's so funny because I think God really had to help us learn about how all that stuff worked. And she was able to find a place that's about a third of that for him now. And we couldn't, we tried in the beginning, we couldn't. And all of a sudden, actually the guy called her on this one. So I definitely see God's hand in all this stuff. And it's not easy being away.
Right.
But like you said, technology, I talk to my mom probably, if not once a day, once every other day. As far as through WhatsApp, it's a phone call, so I can just chat with her on speakerphone.
Yeah. Now, let me again preface this that because this is not meant to be judgmental toward people that came up with a different conclusion of what the Lord wanted them to do in a family situation they were serving overseas. Because this is very unique. I think everyone has to really pray through it. How he wants to lead. But you didn't rush back home in the sense of, when you pull your family off the field and be around dad and help him in this final year or two. What were some of the decisions? I mean, what kind of led into your approach to that as far as why? Because some people, you know, you've heard, well, their parent is elderly or there's something wrong and they've got to go back and they got to do that. You didn't do that. Why not? And in your case, what kind of led you to say, no, I'm still supposed to stay here in the yard.
Yeah, I would say multifaceted. I want to point to one exact thing. And yeah. Again, like you said, this is not everybody's road. I mean, yeah. Sometimes I wouldn't want to judge somebody and say, oh, yeah, they left the mission field, as much as I wouldn't want somebody to judge me and say, how can you be there on the field when your family's going through what they're going through? I think it's God leading individually, individual circumstances. There was a moment at the very beginning. My dad, I think it was around late October, early November. He was still at home. He was still, I mean, we would laugh, but he would make a whole loaf of peanut butter sandwiches. Mm. He would get around. He's shuffled. He's not only got dementia, but he's got a really bad, lymphedema. So it's very difficult for him to walk. But he was still able to use the restroom on his own. He was still, you know, dress himself, feed himself, that kind of stuff. He took two falls. And mom had him taken to the emergency room because he started kind of limping, and he went straight from there to a rehab facility. From the rehab facility, as soon as he got there, he tanked. In that beginning part, I was very much considering going home for a while. My mom literally fell apart emotionally. There was so much shock and all this. And really, I mean, he went from, again, I don't want to be too graphic, but be able to use the restroom on his own and those kind of things, to he having to wear a diaper. And if you follow dementia, you study dementia, it's like plateau, hard drop, plateau. And then even seemed like they go up a little bit. Like last week he had some good days and he was, you know, cutting up and being goofy, but then he drops again. And so in that very beginning spot, I was talking to mom, and almost to the point where, like, mom, you've got to calm down, or if you don't, then I'm on the next plane, because you've got to settle in on this. It was hard for my sister and I, because we had to, my sister and my brother-in-law, their family, they used to be in the field in Africa. He's now a director for another mission agency. So they're a couple hours away. It's nice to know that they're close if they need to be. My sister has gone up a couple times to be with mom and stuff. My aunt and uncle are very big in helping my mom out. So those are some of what has gone into that decision. And you know, the spiritual aspect of it too is, you know, this is part of mom's sanctification process. And really, once she understood that, her shift changed, her mindset changed. Everything in the beginning, every time you fell, every time, I mean, it's just part of having somebody with dementia who's declining. Lots of falls, lots of not eating, lots of incontinence issues, lots of things that are just shocking. And once those started to become like more of a normal thing where it happened a lot more, it's like in the beginning, it shocks you. And after that, so she really has calmed down. And as long as I see that she's okay in that, we've talked about it. Mom, what if I did come home? I'm just going to sit at your house. I mean, unless I go get a job and reestablish life, and we've got ministry and things going on here, what would I do?
Right.
I'd ride with you to the nursing home, go see dad for a couple hours. He's going to talk gibberish and foolishness. He's not missing us because he doesn't recognize me anymore. So what role would I play? So in the beginning probably would have been a role like, you know, mom, chill, you know, we've actually told her she can only go certain hours per week because she was just, it was killing her. It was eating her up seeing dad in that condition. And then we're like, mom, he's going to fall whether you're there or not. He's going to not eat if you're there or not.
Right.
And so, part of that, I mean, obviously most of all, it's a God thing.
Right.
But second of all, was just taking a step back and saying, okay, if we did, what role would I have? What would I do? Really wouldn't change the dynamic at all. It's really more of her response to the situation. I can't force her to respond differently. And like I said, she's done really, really well. She's frail in this whole thing, and it's hard to see things happen. And there's tears when my parents have been married 50 years. I mean, it's hard to see when he has a bad day, or he's taken some falls, or seems like he's taken a major drop. But she handles it well. We talk about it. I just bought her 3 books off Amazon that'll show up next week. You know, just little devotional type things that she can read through. So I try to have a supportive role, mostly just talking to her, mostly just reminding her. Kind of funny, I tease her because we had some difficult moments when we first came here, and I'd call her and I was looking for support, and that's all that was before she was going through her moment. And I tease her, I call her the church lady, and she always go, well, you just need to pray. So when she goes through them, I'm like, Mom, you just need to pray. He's like, shut up.
Yeah, no, so. That's so good. I think one of the things that jumps out there is there's this, ultimately, you have to trust the Lord.
Yeah.
In this. Now that sounds very trite, but this is a real life. It would be so easy in your case to come up with a different answer, but you ultimately, what is right for you at this moment, at least, has been, you know what, I've just got to commit dad to the Lord, and I got to commit my mom to the Lord.
Right.
And you're encouraging, you got that link with your mom that you're regularly in contact with, that you're encouraging her. But ultimately, you're just having to trust the Lord in a new facet, in a new way, mm-hmm. With this distance and with this going on. And I think, I think it could sound harsh to people, but it's absolutely, it's right on, is that, you know, all of this is part of this, everything that comes into our life is part of a sanctification process. And, you know,
you
can't escape that.
There's a morbid side to this, and it sounds awful if even what I'm about to say, but it's like, I tell my mom, in some ways, dad's dead already. Yeah. I know that sounds morbid to say, but there's a side of him. There's a part of him that's no longer, will never come back. That part's gone.
Yeah.
And you've got to be okay with that, because that's part of that. The problem with dementia, you know, it's sad when you see people die of cancer. It's sad when you see people die of a sudden heart attack. But there's almost like a trajectory there. Yeah. You kind of know you're winding up, you're coming to the end kind of thing. Or if it's sudden, okay, sudden is bad, but you deal with it and you start the healing process. With dementia, it's like you literally watch somebody go from an adult who you depended upon to now it's a child who completely depends upon you.
Yeah, that's tough.
And so that's the dynamic that's hard. And so you almost have to come to grips with the part of them that you knew doesn't exist anymore. Yeah, it's dad. I mean, it's my dad, Shelby, he's still my dad. There's weird stuff. I went home at Christmas and mom, their marriage hasn't been the easiest. So mom is doing some things and changing some things around. And I think it's good. I think it's healthy for her to help her work through the grieving process. That's not ever going to come home again unless he comes home to lay in a hospital bed.
Yeah.
And so she's made her home more of a place where people can come. And she's had missionaries in since he's been, you know, since he left the house at the end of last year. And I think those things are good. And again, talking it through, it was just, you know, giving stuff to us when we were there. That's just really weird. It was, my dad was very particular with his things. And I know she can't hang. My dad was very much a kind of like he was the most organized hoarder I've ever met. So, you know, my dad didn't have one flashlight. He had about 70 of them, and they're all nice ones, you know, name brand ones that are just like, you know. So I came back with about 10 or 15 of them, you know, here. But it's just, so it's funny things like that you laugh at. But in the same token, if my dad was in his right mind, I'm telling mom, thank you. I just feel so weird, because if dad was here right now, I'd be like, he'd be going, well, what are you doing with that? You know, why? Yeah. So there's a little weird moments like that. But
yeah, no, but again, I think it's what I see in that is just, again, a deep trust in the Lord. I think, you know, God calls us as missionaries. He knows these things are going to happen in our lives. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, each of us have to not look to escape or get out of this. And like you said, even if you went home, it's not going to change the reality. And how much really can you help? And so, yeah, you're being a help. And I'm sure if circumstances were different, if you didn't have that network, if your mom was doing worse, maybe it changes the equation. Maybe what, you know, as far as what the Lord needs. But, you know, you're having to trust him in a new way, mm-hmm. In the sense of handling this overseas. And, you know, I think, you know, one of the things that has been important to me over the years is, I think, sometimes with missionaries, if we can answer all of our problems, we're not giving a realistic view to the people that we're ministering to as missionaries.
Yeah.
In other words, if the missionary, every time something little breaks, can just write a prayer letter and get money for it to fix it.
Or run home,
then what does that teach the local people that you're ministering to? Okay, so in our case, if every single time we can just fix something by writing a prayer letter or running home or whatever, they can't do that.
Right.
And so then either you're teaching them that, well, God is more for the gringo, the Americans, than he is for us. My point is this, I'm not saying purposely trip yourself up. I'm not purposely, you know, break things so that you just suffer. Don't look for suffering. Suffering will find you. That's my point. Is just, and sometimes, I mean, you're really big on relational ministry. And people, and I'm sure at some point this has come up for discussion in your group, you know, as far as your dad, you're sharing that. And for some, it's like, because for some, they couldn't imagine how could you still stay in another country and not, because the mindset here is all, you know, and that leads you back to a greater call, that leads you back to God's call in your life. And that's, man, that's tough. There's a lot of local people that could not imagine why you would not be back there living there. But again,
yeah, and that's why I said my situation, I would never put that on anybody else. Yeah. There's people who've left our team here who went home to care for loved ones. It's okay. Yes. And I have no ill thought or whatever. It was stage of life. Maybe their ministry here was rounding out where they were, and they felt like, you know, now's the time to, just like you stepped out of being pastor and you're moving into a different supportive role.
Yeah.
And maybe they just felt like it was time, and so God showed them that. So I don't ever want my situation or somebody else's to be the gold standard to say, this is how you have to do it.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that if tomorrow something happened that I wouldn't say, hey, Gary, I think we're going to have to go for a while because things are, so I'm not even eliminating the thought, taking that one step further. I try not to patronize the situation, but I have told the university students, I have told the young boys, they're, well, not all of them are young, you know, the baseball players that are coming to the chapel. I've just said, you know, why I've told them, my dad's at home dying.
Yeah.
My dad's at home dying. Why would I be here? Because I believe what we're sharing with you guys is so important. I think this message is so important that I need to share it.
Yeah.
It's not patronizing. It's not like, oh, look at the sacrifice. And I say that. I'm not trying to be like, oh, mira el sacrificio de los Sykes. No, it's not that at all. It's just saying this message is important. And it's important enough to me and my family, including my mom, that she says, no, there's no sense in being here. Keep doing what you're doing because that's the most important thing. That's what life is all about. I'm not sure of my dad's spiritual condition, to be honest with you. But I think I've seen some things with dementia. He's folded his hands several times, bowed his head. There's been times mom said, what are you doing? And he said, just having a little talk with Jesus. Not a lot of vulnerability there growing up. But my dad had a lot of bitterness and a lot of the, kind of those, I'll call them demons, that he fought with and insecurities that he fought with because of his upbringing. He was both physically, emotionally abused. And so those have raised a lot of questions for me as far as where God's grace extends in those situations. I'm clear on what salvation is and isn't. And there was times where I felt like there was some fruit there, and there's other times I felt like there wasn't. But I know that as long as my dad was cognizant when we were in Venezuela and he didn't have dementia, he was hyper supportive of us and was, you know, I went through my email the other day and found an old email where I had sent him and just said, thanks for supporting us. And he was just like, I'm proud of you guys, what you're doing and, you know, investing in the lives of others. And it wasn't just, you know, humanitarian aid, it was spiritually investing. And so, you know, I don't know, I can't answer those questions. And I pray a lot that he has made that decision. I can't say 100% for sure, but it seems like there's indications that God has shown us here and there. I'm not one of those people when somebody dies, all of a sudden they're with the angels kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? A lot of times that happens. But I also think you look for evidence, you look for fruit. And I think we've seen the little things in his vulnerable state. He seems to have gravitated more to the things of God, to me at least shows there's some kind of foundation there somewhere deep.
Yeah, you know, I appreciate your grace, your grace approach in that as far as how other people might come to a different conclusion, but you still ultimately go back to you're trying to obey God's call and what that looks like in this season of life, which includes this. And so just like if it was different, if you felt Lord really leading you back home, then you would need to obey that call as well. And so it's teaching people to obey that call. But sometimes it doesn't, it runs counter what you would think, as far as what normal people would normally think. And so I think staying here is a, you know, for you, for right now, for what that is an act of obedience. And it's, you know, I think your mom is supportive of that as well. And based upon what you've said, even your dad would be. And
I think so.
It's like, you know, yeah, I want you to do, I don't want you to come home and sit on the couch. Cause here's the reality too. If you have to go home, as you know, as a missionary, you can get away with that for a few months. People would be, but yeah, unfortunately, no. Church is going to drop you. Then what are you going to do? Then right. You're going to have to still go out and get a job and to support your family. And so now all of a sudden you're still out of the house. And so,
I mean, you've also mentioned kind of the morbid side. This is not a business decision by any stretch of the imagination, but that along with that, what would we do? Ride with mom to the, cause we didn't even have a car there. So you know what I'm saying? Ride with mom to go to the nursing home. And we see this as a season. We see this, you know, when mom says to me all the time, I said, you know, oh, I, they called me at midnight the other night, your dad fell. I had to run over there. And I'm like, okay, mom, I get it. And I feel bad that you had to, but you know what? This is a season. The phone's going to quit ringing in the future. So cherish the moment. And they're frustrating sometimes, you know, that he falls, maybe gets hurt or whatever, but cherish the time now. Cause there's a moment that's going to come when the phone's not going to ring. And so it's, we see this as a season of life that, we really couldn't change. And like you said, could really change the trajectory of our life and ministry when there's really nothing that we could do. If dad was at home and mom had nowhere else that she could, and she couldn't manage him and she could, that would be one thing. My dad has retirement that's paying for whatever his needs are right now. So my mom's taken care of as far as a home, and they were good about that kind of stuff financially. And so, there's no worries there. Yeah. And so, as far as that's concerned, we just felt like other than moral support, there's really nothing that I could do being home. And then you're kind of looking at, you know, she goes maybe a couple hours a day. So what's that, you know, 10, 12, 14 hours a week. What do you do with the other, you know, 22 hours a day that you have besides the two that you're going over there? It would be spinning our wheels really, and not really accomplishing anything for him or her, because she's still got to deal with the frustrations and all the things that come along the way. It's just a matter of sanctification process, learning how to respond to him. And learning, like I said, we looked for a place for him in the beginning and couldn't find anywhere. Could not find, nobody had openings. And then when my mom got the bill, if he was going to stay, it was going to be $14,000 a month. Crazy. And she got that bill, and she gets contacted from some guy who reaches out to her and found placement within a day. I mean, you can't say that's not a God thing.
Yeah.
So this has been a spiritually growing time for my mom to go. I mean, I'm kind of spiritually mentoring a little bit with her, going, Mom, this is how God works. Yeah. You know, she's mature. She's a mature believer, but she's never gone through something like this before. So God doesn't throw it out there 10 years advance and say, this is going to happen just so you can prep for it. This is going to happen, and you're not going to have it until you absolutely need it. When you absolutely need it, he's going to provide it, but it won't be a day early.
Yeah, that goes back to Psalm 119, 105. I mean, you know, the word being, you know, for your feet. I mean, as you walk with the Lord, you don't always see the road. Now, some of us like to be able to project and plan and visionaries and all that, but even at that, even your best, you really can't see all the curves and the bumps and the hills, and because you really have to, it's that daily dependence upon the Lord and just walking with him. And so, you know, I think it's great, Jason, you know, just your trust in the Lord, your ministry to your mom, to encourage her, and you can utilize technology. I mean, man, 100 years ago, you couldn't do this.
The boat did burn.
Yeah. And, you know, you wrote letters and it took forever to get there, you know, and so you really can do a lot. And I think for people that might be listening too, is realize that missionaries that do go overseas, yeah, you do have that technology, it's still there, but no matter way you cut it, if your missionary is being faithful to their call, they're going to miss events, activities, things that you might take for granted. They're missing those. And so it just, you know, it's part of the call. God also fills us with new friends and family and events and activities and all that. So it's not a poor us. I'm not meaning to communicate that at all. But there is a sacrifice there. And so if you're listening to this and you've got missionaries, just remember that, you know, like in the case of Jason, little events and activities that you might be taking for granted, you know, he's over here, you know, and he can't do that. And so just, you know, pray for him, pray for their families and just have an appreciation for that. It is a sacrifice. I mean, Jesus does call us to deny ourselves. He does call us to love him supremely over everyone.
And he says, unless you hate you. I mean, obviously it doesn't mean hate, but love. Luke
14.
Yeah. If you don't hate your mother and father and own life also, then you can't be my disciple. And so I don't hate. I mean, obviously that's taking that out of context.
But the comparison there,
right.
I think loving him is seasoned this with a lot of grace. I mean, you're not being judgmental about other people, but it also to be fair, to also bring a complete balance to that, you do come back to that, you know, I have to follow God supreme. That's the key. I've got to love him and follow him, above all other.
And I will say too, God has provided good support structure with my aunt and uncle who are there to help my mom with every decision she's making, financial decisions. That's one. Number two, mom, even though situations can really throw her a curveball, she is still, I've said, other than threatening when she's just kind of half gone crazy over certain stuff that's happened, you know, or like, mom, I'm coming home tomorrow. No, it's okay. You know, but other than those moments where she, in the very beginning, when it was just like emotional roller coaster, you know, just okay 1 minute and then totally on the floor, which is understandable when you're seeing somebody you love falling apart like that. But she wants us to be here. She's supportive of us being here. And I think that's huge, a part of it. She sees a big picture and she doesn't want us to give up on the big picture because there's nothing we really could do if we were there right now. You know, my kids say all the time, well, if Papa dies, we're going to go home. Absolutely. We're going to go home for the funeral. Absolutely. We're going to go celebrate his life. And he was a big part of obviously my life and my kids, you know, but, for now we're here and we're, as James says, we say tomorrow, if the Lord wills. Yeah. We're here today.
That's a good word.
So if God leads differently tomorrow, then I'm going to obey him, just like you've done recently with some changes here. If that's the way he leads, I change. But up until right now, we're here. We're continuing. We're seeing lives changed here. And so I think if my dad was in his right mind, he'd be excited about that.
Amen. Yeah, you know, there was an old dictator here between 30s and 60, 61. Trujillo, and it said that Trujillo would carry around a briefcase full of pesos and a briefcase full of dollars, because he said everybody has a price. And he had U.S. senators, congressmen, whatever, coming down here, and he would meet with them, and then they'd go away saying, "No, everything looks good," you know, down in the Dominican Republic, and everybody has a price. And I've often thought of that over the years: is what's the price? What could happen in your life to cause you to stop following God?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if Satan could bring that, and I'm not saying Satan behind this, but let's say Satan could or whatever happens, what is the price for you to stop obeying God? You know, is it a family sickness? Is it a personal sickness? Is it a financial struggle? What is it that if Satan could offer it, let's just say, let's bring in the devil's advocate,
you know,
if the devil's the advocate, if he could offer the price, what would it be? Everybody has a price. And I think what you're demonstrating here is, you know what, as tough as this is, at least for this season and all that, it doesn't even matter. It doesn't even matter the details of this. You're going to obey God in everything. And so it just so happens that God has said, no, you need to stay here.
This is terrible that I can't remember the disciple. It was either John or Peter that said, "Where else would I go? You have the words of life."
Yeah.
I think within that statement shows that life was not always the prettiest. There's a lot of, you know, following Jesus included some suffering and sacrifice for that, for them. Mm-hmm. But when you boil it down, where else do you go? Because he has the words of life. In other words, following him has to be the most important. And it's not that it doesn't come with a cost, it does. But also comes with grace. And so,
and wasn't it, and a dovetail into that to finish this out, Jesus, appears to Peter on the shore, you know, he jumps in the water, he comes into there. And so, was it, now I'm flipping, it was it John or Peter that Jesus says, you know, you follow me. And he says, well, what about him? And Jesus says, no, You know, you let that take care of it. It essentially says you let that.
Let the dead bury the dead, wasn't it?
Well, no, you let me worry about him.
Oh, yeah.
You
yeah.
follow me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's sort of like, hey, don't worry about what everybody else is
yeah.
saying and doing.
Because everybody's sanctification process is different. And so for someone who might have just packed up and gone straight home, I'm cool with that because that's them. That's their process. And as long as they're okay with God and God's okay with them, then that's the way it needs to be. It's yeah, not my
it's obedience over
yep.
Over everything. Yep. Well, I think you know, you've given insight into how people can pray for you. This has really bothered me, so I want to look it up if I can. even if we may not even have time to finish it out, but you've given people.
No, we got time.
You've got people that
was it what?
No.
Gary's looking it up on his
yeah,
iPad.
It's John. Yeah, I'm flipping through my iPad here. Let's see. What version?
Careful.
Yeah. So Peter, turning around, saw the disciple, yeah, whom Jesus loved.
John.
Yep. Yeah. And so, yeah, Peter says to him, you know, but Lord, what about this man? And he says, if I will, Jesus, let's see.
And this is funny too, because this is from John. So this is John's take on the whole situation.
Right. So Peter, turning about, seeth the disciple whom Jesus loved, following, which also leaned on his breast at supper and said, Lord, which is it? He that betrayeth thee? Okay. So Jesus says, if I will that he tarry till I come, what is that to thee? Follow thou me. And so Peter, what shall this man do? Peter asked. And he says, what does it matter? You follow me. So Peter is worried about John. And Jesus is like, I'll take care of John.
Jesus throws
you
a big
follow me.
Jesus throws a big nunya at him. Yeah. Nunya business.
Nunya business. You follow me. You know, hope you enjoyed the breakfast, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think ultimately, you know, it's a term, you know, obedience. Some people have used that term for, you know, they've used it, they've manipulated people to obedience to them, you know, but we can't get away from the fact that we are called to obey Christ. If you love me, obey my commandments. Obedience is part of the Christian walk. It's part of the sanctification walk. And there are trials and things that are going to come up. And if you go to the mission field thinking that everything's going to be roses, because sometimes you can go and you can have this glossy, you know, everything's glossy. It's everything's going to be perfect and smooth.
First stage of culture shock.
Yeah. It's not going to happen. I mean, you're going to have to face some things in life and seasons. And so, ultimately at the end of the day, you boil everything else around and it's like, what does God say?
Yeah.
What does God say?
And that's different for every person in these kind of dynamic situations. Yeah. So
that's a good word. So we know how to, you know, better understand what's going on with you and to pray for this season. And the difficult thing is you just don't know. I mean, it could be today or it could be 3 years
from now. My mom literally just texted me and she's on the transport to get him from the older facility, the one he's rehabbing at, to the new facility where he's moving to today. So that right there is a good note to end on as far as a direct answer to prayer. Even the transport, God totally worked that out. So there's just a lot of, all I can say in this is when God tells you to do something, he works out the details and he has worked out the details here. And so every time there's been a what I would call a stressful moment, he's provided what was needed in that moment. Amen. And so that's cool.
Yeah,
to see.
You know, he does that. Amen. I think it's great too, that, you didn't have to spend $14,000 a month of your support.
Yeah, because we know I'm making that kind of haul, don't we? Anyway, we'll end on that note right there. All right, guys, thanks for being with us. God bless, and we will catch you on the next episode.